Best practices for school safety, teaching how to fix Teslas, and a new documentary about a dying game in Miami. Hello and welcome to Sundial on WLRN from the studios of the Miami Herald in Doral. I'm Luis Hernandez. Pinellas County Sheriff Bob Gualtieri was in Broward this week to share his thoughts on how to make schools safer, and he's got issues with how leadership is handling that. Also, Teslas may become a regular sight in South Florida in the near future. Miami-Dade College is getting involved in the biz, and they're starting a program that's going to train future Tesla techs. And Billy Corbin has produced documentaries like The U and The Cocaine Cowboys. He has a new film called Magic City Hustle about the game of Hi-Li and the least likely suspects recruited to play it. Finally, if you've watched any movie over the last 40 years, you've heard a score from the legendary John Williams. Well, he's going to be in town this weekend for the New World Symphony. We'll learn all about it. All of that today on Sundial. First, the news. Welcome to Sundial on WLRN from the studios of the Miami Herald in Doral. I'm Luis Hernandez. Thanks so much for joining us. Well, there's a great deal of tension in the Parkland community over school safety and the Broward County School Superintendent Robert Runcie. On Tuesday, Pinellas County Sheriff and Chairman of the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School Public Safety Commission, Bob Gualtieri, made an appearance at the Broward County School Board meeting, and he gave a detailed presentation about his findings on what went wrong leading up to the February 14th school shooting at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High. Also this week, community members showed up at a controversial town hall meeting where some people were calling for Runcie's removal, others were defending him. We're joined now by the Miami Herald's education reporter, Colleen Wright. Colleen, great to have you back.
Thanks for having me on.
All right, let's start with this. I mean, what was the significance of having Sheriff Gualtieri being at the Broward County School Board meeting?
So, Sheriff Gualtieri is no stranger to Broward. He was in Broward a lot over the past year for the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas Public Safety Commission meetings. But he was there at the Broward School Board on Tuesday as kind of a return to ground zero, because, of course, all of his work kind of focused on, the events leading up to and after the, shooting at Stoneman Douglas on last year on Valentine's Day. But he was really there to not only brief the board, who they weren't able to make it to all the commission meetings. He wanted to kind of bring the findings personally to them and also rehash his calling, his gospel, if you will, that he's been spreading to school districts all around the state of you don't have to wait for big laws to be passed to get things done. You don't have to wait for million-dollar contracts. There's things you can do today, low cost, and policy decisions that you can make today to make sure that this doesn't happen again.
Now, he started his presentation. He was talking about the Promise Program. This is the Broward School District's disciplinary diversion program meant to keep students out of the criminal justice system. But what does he think about it?
So Bob Gualtieri is actually a big fan of a pre-arrest diversion, especially for youth. Actually, in Pinellas County, I know this because I used to work there, they actually have a pretty high rate, like 97% of kids who get a civil citation or some other pre-arrest diversion other than being arrested. In Broward, that's actually more around 68%. He thinks that the issue that Broward County has with its Promise program is it didn't seem very organized. There was a lot of confusion during the commission meetings on, is it three strikes and you're out? There were some indications that there were five.
He's not against the program. He's just, it's how they're running it.
Yeah. He actually said on Tuesday at the school board meeting that, the reason why the school board's getting a lot of heat is because they're letting, quote, too many kids get a bite of the apple. So he thinks he's all about, pre-arrest diversion. He's all about keeping kids out of the criminal justice system. But there's got to be kind of an organized way to do it. And one of the things he tried to plug on Tuesday is use of the prevention web. And basically, it's like he described it as like a non-punitive database that just tracks offenses that kids do all around the state so that everyone's kind of on the same page and kids aren't gaming the system.
Do we know how many? I think you mentioned a number a second ago, but I want to get a sense. How many students are going through the Promise program?
So that came up on at the board meeting. The figures I heard were anywhere from 1,800 to 2,000.
Okay.
Go through Promise. And that's just the ones that are referred to the Promise Program. So that's not every kid. There's only specific offenses that are eligible. And they also talked about the kids that reoffend. And they said the ones that reoffend more than three times, there's on average around 30 kids.
All right. So last week, the Broward County School Board passed some policies and emergency protocols to help prevent the next school shooting. What are they proposing now?
Well, so last week, you know, they first of all put into policy, you know, something that they could point to, that, you know, all employees are required to report threats. Staff members, every staff member at a school is authorized to call a code red. And if the what they were calling code red for, if it didn't actually materialize into a real threat, that their jobs wouldn't be held harmless.
Are they clear, by the way, on what a code? I mean, how? What goes into determining what a code red is and everybody's okay with when to call for one?
Right. Yes. So it did say in the policy that they will go through training that will specifically outline it. It wasn't in the policy language itself, but it did emphasize the need for everyone needs to be kept up to speed on what warrants a code red.
What does Gualtieri believe really are better tactics? What is he saying that Run-C and the school board should be doing to make schools safer to avoid another shooting?
Sure. So it kind of goes back to that you don't need a big law, you don't need $1 million to pass things. He was saying, for example, like the policies on code red, right? Like that's a perfect example. You know, that just got passed last week. But he's saying things like that could be put in place. He was also saying, you know, like you can go get walkie-talkies at Walmart, you know, in order to improve communication on campus, especially when campuses, you know, like Marjory Stoneman Douglas, I think, has like 16 buildings on it or something. You know, it's over 10 acres or so. You know, things that you could do now to improve communication on campus, get the word out if something really were to go down. He also emphasized the need to put in hard corners in classrooms. And what that is basically a designated part of the classroom that is out of the line of sight of a shooter, you know, if a shooter were to come by. And he emphasized that the safest place may not be a safe place. It might not be the most shielded, guarded, secure place in the room, but there's got to be one place in the room that's more secure than the rest, is what he's preaching. And he's saying that they need to, you know, do this now. And Broward's working on it, but they're not there yet.
Again, talking with education reporter for the Miami Herald, Colleen Wright. She was at the Broward County School Board meeting Tuesday, giving us an update on that. There was also a controversial town hall meeting Monday where there were calls among some families for Broward County Superintendent Robert Run-C to step down, and some are coming to his defense as well. Before I get to that, I wanted to ask you, I didn't want to skip this part. Sheriff Gualtieri has been a proponent of the idea of arming staff, and that is part of the law, allowing for that. What does he actually say he wants to see that he thinks would be good for schools?
Sure. What he says, you know, I've heard him say this a couple times now, is that, you know, five people on staff with a gun is better than four. Four people on staff with a gun is better than three. He doesn't believe that one resource officer on campus is enough, especially, like I said, on big campuses with a lot of buildings that are really spread out. He is for just arming staff that is willing and capable of having a gun on campus, and especially having multiple people where you're not sure who's carrying what, you know, kind of to raise that risk. He used the example of Chris Hickson. He was the athletic director that day at Stoneman Douglas. He came into Building 12 where the shootings were happening. And Chris Hickson is a veteran. He was a military veteran. And Gualtieri has mentioned many times, what if Chris Hickson actually had been carrying, and could he have taken you know, the school shooter down that day, because he actually, when he was shot, and he was shot that day by the shooter, he tried to crawl into a cove, and Nicholas Cruz several times, I believe there were five times in the Building 12 building, he didn't have any ammo. He had to reload his gun. And what if in those pauses, if Chris Hickson was carrying, could he have maybe influenced that day? Could he have saved lives? But he wasn't carrying.
Let's move over to this one. Governor Ron DeSantis asked for the Florida Supreme Court grand jury to investigate school safety. He's getting it. They're going to look at spending money for school security in districts across the state. This was Broward County School Superintendent Robert Run-C's response to that.
We welcome the fact that we're actually going to have a grand jury that's going to look at what we actually do and we can actually get the facts out versus some of the information that we see that's out there. And like, we try to get the facts out, but if you don't want to listen, I can't make folks listen. So I welcome an independent review.
All right, so he's for it. Have we heard anybody else from the school board, their response? Anybody say anything about this idea of a grand jury?
Really haven't heard anything on that point. I think it's just another investigation that they welcome. The school board and the superintendent have been critical of, press and coverage. They've said that there's a lot of misinformation out there, and they've been kind of harping on the fact that maybe this grand jury will bring out, some facts about what happened that day. But it's just another investigation into what happened a year ago.
Now, this has been going on for some time. Obviously, there are people who are calling for Ronci to be removed from the position. You've heard from, like, at this town hall, people who just believe that he's not doing a good job, that he didn't do a good enough job. This is why we're in this situation. He has supporters as well. But where really is the pressure coming from to remove him?
Definitely larger by the Parkland parents. A lot of parents still think that, leaders, including Ronci, should be held accountable, that there were failures that day that maybe, could have, if policies were in place, maybe they wouldn't have happened. Like having staff ready to identify, the shooter coming in the school gates that day, calling a code red. There was confusion on that. A lot of people point to Ronci as there's just been too many miscues, too many things that weren't in place, and that how the school board kind of handled the response after was also not great. So I would say largely the Parkland parents have been pushing for it. But at this town hall meeting on Monday, there was a huge showing from the African American community that came from all around, also a large part from Central Broward, and they were saying how there's a lot of good things that Ronci has done, especially for minority students, particularly Black students, in terms of raising the graduation rate and giving a lot of credit to the Promise program, keeping kids out of that school to prison pipeline. So a lot of those folks, from the Black community do think that, that they sympathize greatly with the parents in Parkland, but they also feel like the good things have kind of been shoved aside because, they are not as an affluent area of the school district, and they feel that there's a lot of things that Ronci brings for them.
Any discussion going on right now in the school board about even thinking about removing him?
Yes. So Lori Alhadef, whose daughter Alyssa was actually one of the students who was murdered that day at Stoneman Douglas, she was elected onto the school board in August, I believe, and she represents the Parkland area, and she actually has an item on Tuesdays, the upcoming Broward School Board meeting, to consider terminating Robert Ronci. There's not a lot of details in the plans, at least what's available right now to the public. But his contract actually does allow for termination for just cause.
Again, education reporter for the Miami Herald, Colleen Wright, getting an update on Broward County schools, talking about school safety, but also talking about the pressure that is on Superintendent Robert Ronci to remove him from that office. We'll keep up on this story. Colleen, always a pleasure. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks so much.
All right, coming up, we're going to learn about the new program at NDC teaching people how to become techs at Tesla. And later in the program, John Williams conducting live at the New World Symphony. That's why you're hearing some Star Wars. All of that coming up next on Sundial.
Miami-Dade County Auditorium and Mermaid Theater of Nova Scotia present The Very Hungry Caterpillar. Three beloved stories by Eric Carle, award-winning children's book illustrator and author, are retold on stage through the magic of black light and fanciful puppets. Saturday, March 2nd at 3 p.m. Tickets are free. You can RSVP at miamidadecountyauditorium.org. Brought to you by the Miami-Dade County Department of Cultural Affairs. You can celebrate the Big Read and South Florida's Native American culture by joining Miami Book Fair on a guided field trip to the Atatiki Seminole Museum. Tickets can be reserved today at miamibookfair.com.
Welcome back to Sundial on WLRN, and I'm Luis Hernandez. Well, the tech company Tesla is back in the headlines. CEO and founder Elon Musk was on social media breaking guidelines established from the settlement he made with the Securities and Exchange Commission last year. He tweeted last night about major news coming for the company today, and this comes off a tweet from last week promoting the company's expected production this year. Tesla made zero cars in 2011, but will make about 500,000 in 2019. Now, the Securities and Exchange Commission reached a $20 million settlement with Musk for securities fraud that forced him to step down as chairman. Now, as the new developments continue to come from the tech giant, they are growing their market and their workforce here in South Florida. Miami-Dade College recently announced a new partnership with the company called the Tesla Start Program. It's a three-month certificate training program that develops qualified students to become certified Tesla technicians. Joining us now to discuss the partnership is Dr. John Westveen. He's the Vice Provost of Academic Schools at Miami-Dade College. Dr. Westveen, thank you so much for joining us today.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me.
What was the impetus for starting this relationship? Did you guys reach out to Tesla? Did they reach out to you?
They actually reached out to us. So the Tesla Corporation is growing, and we're entering the preliminary stages of what I'll call the electric vehicle revolution. So the future is already here, and now we're trying to figure out how we act with that. And Tesla has three large markets: California, Texas, and Florida. And South Florida in particular is the highest growth market. And they recognize that in order to maintain the sustainability of the company, that you have to have skilled technicians in the workforce, and that's a major challenge. So they approached a number of institutions in Florida, and then specifically focused on South Florida because of the growth and future demand. And after speaking to a number of institutions, they concluded that Miami-Dade was the college of choice because of our ability to be able to provide a scalable program and provide skilled talent for that demanded workforce.
Now, look, it's a tech giant, but I do have to ask you, because that's why I mentioned it in the intro. I mean, Elon Musk, he's been in the news not always for positive reasons, but I mean, this recent controversy, what impact could that have on the relationship, or would it?
I don't think it has any impact. If anything, we look at this as an opportunity, and Tesla aside, the future of alternative energy sources for vehicle transportation really is the future. So our program is launching regardless, and this is something that we had looked at before we even went into any type of discussion with Tesla, because we recognize the future of automobiles and trucks and different types of transportation services for the future. So we were starting such a program, maybe not quite using the same model, and I don't think that we're impacted one way or the other.
So say I'm a student, I'm interested in this. What is the training going to be? What are you going to teach me?
So it's super exciting. We're trying to create more earn and learn accelerated models. And basically, as long as you've got a high school graduation and you've got the desire to do something, you're resilient, you're motivated, you're committed to creating change in the world, you will literally go through an application process where you become an employee of Tesla right from the beginning of training. So you would go online, and there's information that you would fill out. And once that information is received, Tesla will actually reach out to each of the applicants. And then the applicants will go through an interview process and a basic general knowledge test and an interview process. And then once you are selected into the program, you'll go through a three-week accelerated training session, and you'll earn a Miami-Dade College Career and Technical Certificate. So that's a four-credit certificate that allows you to potentially apply towards an associate or a baccalaureate degree. And you'll also earn Tesla certifications, and you'll learn all about battery and electric vehicle technology and all the things and components that make up a Tesla, from the engine components to the wheels, to the infotainment systems, and everything else that you can think of.
And I wanted to clarify too. So basically, you get accepted to the program, you become an employee.
That is correct. So there is a tuition, and it's a very reasonable tuition that's still to be determined, but it's going to be extremely reasonable for those that want to enter the program. But the beauty of that is that you're also financially compensated during the course of the 12 weeks. So the rate is Florida minimum wage plus $1, so that equates to $9.46 per hour. And the reason that you earn while you learn is that the expectation is that this is a full-time commitment from the beginning of of day one. And you are literally in the lab and in the classrooms doing the hands-on applied learning Monday to Friday during business hours. And in the evenings, you are self-studying. And then on the weekends, you actually get an internship on a Saturday at a Tesla service facility in South Florida. And again, compensated for that effort.
So obviously, Teslas are very different from your standard car. You're not dealing with engine parts and grease and so forth. I'm curious what level of expertise these students have to have going into the program? Do you require a background in, say, computer programming or something?
Interestingly, you don't. It's more about the cultural fit and the personality fit and the ability to be motivated and learn. So some people will say that a background in automotive technology will be really beneficial to you. But because the Tesla vehicle, as you mentioned, and just electric vehicles generally, they're not the same wheels and grease that we're used to. So those that do have IT backgrounds, they're certainly welcome to the program, and we'll have a great area of skills to bring to the program. But generally, you don't need any knowledge as it relates to anything automotive, and you will literally learn the Tesla way from the very beginning. So in some ways, if you come in with an open mind, you're going to be shaped with that knowledge. And when you graduate after 12 weeks, you'll have approximately 800 hours of very sophisticated training underneath your belt.
You talk about the Tesla way. You talked about the Tesla culture. What is the Tesla vision or mantra that these students need to be a part of in order to be part of the program?
The most important thing is that you have to have values, and as part of the values, you have to believe in positive change for the world, and that's what Tesla is all about. It's about positive change for the world, from the environmental side of things to reaching out to the citizens within your community to make sure that everybody is prosperous and living a happy life, and that's really what Tesla is about, and that's part of the cultural fit.
You're constructing a facility at the Miami-Dade College West Campus. Tell us about what that's going to look like.
So this is super exciting. This is the first purpose-built piece of real estate that Tesla has been partnered with an academic institution. And our West Campus location in Doral has a large 22,000 square foot warehouse, and approximately one quarter of that warehouse is dedicated to the Tesla Start program, and is literally a blank slate that will be outfitted to identify what you would find in a real service technician facility. So this is really the garage, and as a Tesla owner, you rarely ever see, if ever, the garage, because most of the repairs are done remotely through online because everything's computer related. But within the facility, you'll see lifts and different types of equipment and computers that would be identical as if you were out in the real world, so that when you step into the real world, there is zero transition. And what's really interesting about the center is that we'll be equipped with six Tesla vehicles initially. So you have three different models and two of each kind. And essentially, it's a safe, secure lab environment where you are learning how to maintain and repair these vehicles, and the expectation is that you will make mistakes in that safe, secure environment, so that when you do go out into your profession, you have mastered that skill.
You know, one of the things that I find interesting is I've seen, you know, I've been to one of the Tesla stores, and so I've seen they have the display there of what the Tesla looks like when you remove the body. And of course, it doesn't have what you see in a car. It doesn't have the engine and all these moving parts. So I'm wondering, like, what, you know, what are some of the things that you're training the students to do? Help us understand that, again, the Tesla is built so differently, and so you don't have to learn a lot of mechanics.
Right. I mean, it really, in many ways, is an IT profession. And you're learning about alternative energy. You're learning about electric technology, battery technology, solar technology, alternative fuel sources. And there's a lot of different components that make all that up. And my guess is that when students graduate from the program, they're also going to be in demand by different types of industries that utilize the same types of technologies. And we found that in the aviation business that happened as well. A lot of people have gone through aviation programs where they have become airframe and power plant mechanics, as an example, and the solar wind energy industry has picked them up because it's the same type of technology, turbine engines. And so it's transferable skills that doesn't limit you just to working with Tesla or with electric vehicles, but potentially in other industries at the same time.
I'm talking with John Wensveen. He's the Vice Provost of Academic Schools at Miami-Dade College. Miami-Dade College recently announced the launch of the Tesla Start program. It's a training program over 3 months where students can become certified Tesla technicians. They will be accepting applications for the program that starts this fall, coming in the near future here. How does this partnership, John, reflect on Miami-Dade College's vision to build these relationships with companies that are breaking ground in the tech sphere?
So our mission for the future is to figure out how we create more co-invested relationships. And I often comment that academic institutions and industry talk, but they don't necessarily marry each other. And what that means is that we have to listen to industry and identify what the challenges are, and then how do we help provide solutions to those challenges. So the Tesla model is something that I see replicating in many different types of industries and different types of occupations. That accelerated way of doing things and getting students to the job market as quickly as possible so that they have job security, financial stability, and that businesses have financial models that are sustainable for the future. And a co-invested relationship, from our perspective, is when industry comes into your environment and believes in supporting the infrastructure, whether it's through donations or through financial investments, but also providing personnel. So they co-design the curriculum, they help with the infrastructure, they provide the internship opportunities, the full-time job placement opportunities, the professional skills development, the coaching, the mentoring, and all the things that go with that. And that truly is the future. So when this Tesla model launches successfully, this is not... this is base one, basically, of a home run. There are going to be other models that replicate the same thing, representing the targeted industries in Miami-Dade County.
And are there other companies that you're partnering with or working to set up similar type of programs and partnerships?
We are. We're exploring all kinds of different types of discussions right now. And the great thing about Tesla is a lot of folks in industry, not just locally, but nationally and even internationally, have contacted us wondering, how do we partner with you? What kind of things should we be doing? Because you're innovative and different than other academic institutions, and you're entrepreneurial and you're strategic. And these are great things that we want to hear, which is not common terminology that you find typically with education. So we're looking at the 7 targeted industries in Miami-Dade County, because these are the high growth, high paid wage sectors. This is where the skilled talent is needed. And our ultimate mission is to look at the citizens of our community so that way we can recruit locally, we can train locally, we can complete locally, we can place locally, and we can sustain you locally. And that will mean great things for industry moving forward.
And remind people real quickly, the launch of this program, and people could still apply.
Correct. So it's an ongoing application process. We're launching in the fall. The actual start date is yet to be determined. We'll be announcing that very shortly within the coming weeks. But you can apply now. You can actually go online to mdc.edu, and it's /Tesla. And anybody that's interested will literally submit their information, and it goes directly to Tesla. And Tesla and Miami-Dade will reach out to you directly to discuss what next steps look like.
And it's called Tesla Start Program, a new program by Miami-Dade College. And as he said, it's going to be, you're an employee. You don't just get accepted. You become an employee, and they train you to become a Tesla employee for a long time. John Wensveen, Vice Provost of Academic Schools at Miami-Dade College. Such a pleasure, John. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Appreciate the opportunity.
All right. Still to come, a new documentary about the game of high life from the makers of Cocaine Cowboys. That's coming up next on Sundial.
Art, food, fun, music. The 21st Annual Art Fest in the Pines offers something for everyone. March 9th and 10th from 10 to 5 at the Charles F. Dodge City Center. More at ppines.com/artfest. Presented by the City of Pembroke Pines and ArtServe.
The Miami Home Design and Remodeling Show returns March 1st through 3rd at the Mana Wynwood Convention Center. You can meet Josh Flagg of Million Dollar Listing LA, get inspired at the designer rooms for the stars, and enjoy lifestyle seminars. Info at homeshows.net.
Welcome back to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez. Last year, there was an idea to bring together former University of Miami athletes from different sports and turn them into highlight players. Now, their stories are part of a new documentary called Magic City Hustle from Billy Corbin and Raconteur Films. That's the same makers of The U, Parts 1 and 2, and Cocaine Cowboys. The films will premiere this Saturday at the Miami-Dade College's Tower Theater. It's part of the Miami International Film Festival. And we spoke to Billy Corbin between edits as he makes the final touches to the film. And we started with how this idea came across his desk.
How did you find the story? And what a fascinating story. Former UM athletes, football players, baseball players, you got a little bit of a lot of things, becoming highlight players. Where did that come from?
As I recall, I first read about it in the Miami Herald, who had covered it very early in 2018. And then I was talking to a friend who works at the casino, who said, "Did you hear about this?" I said, "I did hear about this." I said, "You know, you're interested in meeting the guys?" And I was like, "Yeah, I'll come and meet the guys." And I don't know that I thought it would make a very good documentary, to tell you the truth. And then I came and met the players, some of whom I knew. Kenny Kelly was a legend. In fact, that's his nickname. And Hylai is legend. And he was legendary at the University of Miami because he was both a Hurricanes quarterback and he was a professional baseball player. He had been drafted. So he was the guy on campus, a big man on campus. You know, Kenny Kelly was involved, and which was kind of cool. And then guys I'd heard of, Tenar Davis and Nate the Great Brooks. And I was like, I came in and started watching them at North Miami Amateur Hylai where they were training. These guys had some of them world-class athletes. Some of them went on to play professionally in baseball and football, track and field. And they had never played Hylai before. Okay.
Right.
Some of them had never heard of Hylai before.
They couldn't even pronounce it. Some
Jalala, they called it when they, you know, and so they put a cesta on their hands for the first time in their lives in January or February of 2018. And on July 1st, 2018, ready or not, they became professional Hylai players.
Whose idea was this, to bring former UM athletes together to make them into Hylai players?
My understanding, it was the COO at Magic City Casino, which growing up we all knew as the Flagler Greyhound track. And so the COO, Scott Savin, and so he thought, well, why don't we, you know, we've given a lot of money to the school. Why don't we try to do something for the former athletes? And because where are they now? What do you do after the game?
How much of it was to help the former athletes, but how much of it was, because it's, look, Hylai is a sport that used to be so popular, and it's if it hasn't died, it's
dead.
It's barely basically hanging out. Yeah. And so how much of it was kind of like, well, wait a minute, maybe we get some former celebrities, local celebrities, maybe we can build it back up. Was that ever an intention?
Oh, I think, yeah, I think they thought it was a win-win-win all around. I think there was a lot of reasons why they were doing it. And listen, the main reason, the movie's called Magic City Hustle, and that's because this thing's a hustle for everybody. Make no mistake. It's not just the players. It's the owners of the casino. It's the denizens of the casino who come in there to try to, you know, get a jackpot every day. Literally, they're outside the gates before opening. You know, and it's wild because it's a local casino, which is, it's a funny scene, you know, because it's like the people there, it's not a tourist attraction per
right,
se.
Exactly.
It's like all the abuelos y abuelitas from Fountain Blue and West Miami and Flagami and Little Havana all convene there. And so it's like a fun, like, scene, you know, and it's like Cayocho, like in a casino.
You know, in the film is really interesting. You know, they reach out to the players and they send emails to the players inviting them to do this.
The email said that Magic City is looking for male athletes to try out for their new Hylai team.
I need some clarity on this, basically. It's like, did you send this to the right person? All right, I know it wasn't no joke, but did you send it to the right person?
And I looked at it, and I'm like, oh, man, I'm not gonna do this. And then I got another email. So I'm like, okay, let me see what this is all about.
Know how to pronounce the word?
You gotta ask Amanda. I came to her and I was like, Jalala. Jalala.
And I was like, Jalala. Hylai? And he's like, oh yeah, however you pronounce it.
What I find interesting is that, I mean, a lot of these guys grew up down here. How did they not know about Hylai?
Well, the one guy who says Jalala, he actually, L.A. Bradley, he's from Virginia.
Okay.
So he came down here for college and then never left, as you do. I imagine if you're from Virginia and you come down to Miami for college, you never want to leave. But then his girlfriend there that you heard in the clip, Amanda, she's a Miami girl. So she was like, Jalala, you mean Hylai? And he goes, the only thing I know about Hylai is from the Dos Equis commercial, you know, where the most interesting man in the world is like the younger version of him, like all CGI and brown bearded is like playing, you know, playing in a fronton. And some of the other guys, they knew it like from, they knew like the Miami Hylai jingle from like the TV and radio spots,
right,
you know?
Right.
And so, but very few of them had ever been to see a game or had ever thought about playing.
And you know what? And I was thinking every time I talk about Hylai, because I haven't seen it in almost 15 years. And I think about it and I always, the conversation always goes to what killed it. And, but you point out in one of the conversations in the movie, and I didn't think about this, the lottery, and they did have a 2-year strike at one point. The players did.
Longer, yeah. I mean, it was a 1-2 punch, and they happened at exactly the same time. First thing was the Florida lottery was introduced. First, the scratch-offs, and then the lotto itself, and that suddenly became competition for other gambling options. You know, you didn't have to schlep to a Hylai fronton, figure out how the hell to bet on it. Then you had the strike, and as you said, it was over. It was actually closer to 2.5 years, and to this day, it holds the record for the longest strike in the history of professional sports. So with that 1-2 punch, by the time you came out of, you know, out of the 80s into the early 90s, you went from $1 million days at Miami High Life to basically crickets in the fronton.
I'm talking with Billy Corbin of Raconteur Films. He's behind the new documentary titled Magic City Hustle, which premieres this Saturday at the Tower Theater as part of the Miami International Film Festival. The documentary follows the story of former University of Miami athletes taking on the sport of high lie. Yes, it still exists. It's at the Magic City Casino. Magic City Hustle, that word has really so many meanings, so many layers in this movie. But I really love how at the beginning, we don't jump into the high lie. We follow some of these guys' lives. And those who are still living in Miami, you know, they talk about the Miami hustle.
Well, just a few weeks ago, you had the United Way release its study that showed that 60%, that's 60% of Miami-Dade County residents cannot make ends meet. At least 19% are...
We did it on the show.
Absolutely. 19% living in poverty. The balance are essentially what we call the working poor, who are working their butts off but cannot cover just the basics in life because of cost of living. Rent, groceries, transportation to and from work and school. And we are turning into a third world economy. And the Miami of today is the America of tomorrow. So this is a sneak preview, I think, of where the rest of the country is going. And, you know, everybody calls it now the gig economy. You know, we call it the hustle economy here in Miami. And this is the ultimate hustle town. No one can get by with just one job. So you had these guys who had a series of side hustles. You know, they're not doing one thing. They're doing two things. They're doing six things, some of them. And then all of a sudden, they get this email that says, you can win up. We got a pot of like $400,000 plus a salary, plus dental, plus medical. And they're like, we can set these other things aside. I mean, if you have a career, Miami's not a town, I'll put it to you this way. There's no factory where we all go to work for 30 years, at the end of which they bring out the cake and the watch and we have a retirement. That's not how Miami works, you know?
One guy's an Uber driver, one guy's an ice cream truck driver. Well, that's one of his jobs.
One of his jobs.
Yeah. I mean, you had guys who were just, they had a lot of different things going on at one time.
Bartenders, real estate, selling cars, hip-hop producers, running a beauty salon, just running a security company, doing, you know, radio announcing for FIU football. I mean, you trying to coach on the side. One guy is a cop, a model, an actor, a sports broadcaster. You know, he's a podcaster now. I mean, like, nobody has one thing going on. You can't to make ends meet here. And that's really, it's not about high lie. That's why it's called Magic City Hustle. You know, it's about sort of Miami as a case study in the gig economy, I think.
Going to the sound of the film and the music they use, you have a variety of South Florida bands, some of them that we featured. I mean, Lemon City Trio, Magic City Hippies, Spam All-Stars. Why is it important, you know, in making sure that you're making this film about South Florida, that you keep that Miami experience?
It's funny, you know, we were watching a rough cut a couple weeks ago. My wife said, this is the most Miami thing you've ever done, which I think is high praise when you look at our body of work. And
Cocaine Cowboys and the U and all that. Really? Wow.
And I think she's not wrong. You know, and this is the first doc, I think, that we've ever done with no original score. For me, I was like, you know, it's a Verite doc, which is a follow doc. You know, we it's sort of a season in the life of these characters where we follow them around. Yeah, there's interviews and there's some archive, but mostly it's the follow stuff, you know, and it's just real life kind of unfolding before the audience's eyes and our eyes in real time. So it kind of felt like, you know, maybe we don't do a score to kind of push the emotion per se, but we just engage. I think there's as many as 35 different artists, all local Miami artists and bands and composers and musicians. And some of them have a couple tracks on it, but for the most part, we just wanted to find a diversity of sound that represented Miami. It's like, yeah, these guys have a lot of Kane swagger. And incidentally, they have, I think, something like tripled or quintupled the number of African-American players to ever play in the history of High Life. So, but it's not all hip hop. You know, there's a lot of, Miami is pretty diverse with respect to music because there's so many different people who like so many different tastes. So I wanted to be a cross section of that and representative of that.
Do you think this movie, because again, it got me thinking about High Life and I hadn't thought about it in so long. Do you think this movie changes people's view of High Life? I'm not saying that you're going to save the sport. I'm just wondering, do you think that people might say, wait a second, I it's right here in our backyard?
I don't necessarily believe that it will save High Life, but I got to tell you, what convinced me ultimately to make the doc and to follow these guys was, I liked the guys so much. You know, they're all humans. They all have their flaws, but you root for them. They're underdogs.
And again, that's Billy Corbin of Raconteur Films. You can learn more about Magic City Hustle, see photos from the film, and learn more about the upcoming Miami International Film Festival by going to our social media, WLRN Sundial. Still to come, if you're a movie lover, he's been a part of your life for years. We'll hear about the New World Symphony, a concert coming up being conducted this weekend by the legendary John Williams. That's all coming up next.
South Florida is your home. It's where you've put down roots and built a life. And you want to see this community thrive in a world that is changing before our eyes. The future will depend on bold leaders like you to step up and use their philanthropy to drive real change. Learn how an endowed charitable fund in your name at the Community Foundation of Broward can help you to make a difference that lasts forever. Learn more at cfbroward.org. The Community Foundation of Broward. Be bold. Miramar Cultural Center presents Pete Souza. On March 1st, the former chief photographer for President Obama speaks about his time in the White House. Tickets include a copy of his latest book, Shade, A Tale of Two Presidents. Tickets available at Ticketmaster.com.
Welcome back to Sundial. I'm Luis Hernandez. We are hosting the show today from the WLRN studios in Doral at the Miami Herald. Star Wars, Indiana Jones, Harry Potter, just a small compilation of some of the film scores by legendary and iconic composer John Williams. It's honestly hard to choose. Over Williams' five-decade career in the industry, he served as music director for more than 100 films. From, again, Star Wars to Harry Potter, Indiana Jones, his music has become a mainstay for all film lovers. And he's won 5 Academy Awards and 51 Oscar nominations and is the Academy's most nominated living person. In a special one-time performance this Saturday night, Williams' music will come to life at the New World Symphony Soundscape. The free show is open to the public, and it will be conducted by John Williams himself. Now, we get to talk to Howard Herring. He's the president and CEO of the New World Symphony, and we talked about what audiences can expect this weekend and how they chose the music for the performance.
The list is endless, and of course, when we began to do our homework, we were surprised by the incredible offerings that John Williams brings forward. Close Encounters of the Third Kind and Harry Potter and Raiders of the Lost Ark and E.T. and Star Wars, those are the movies that continue to resonate, enormously powerful when they premiered, and now, in some cases, decades later, still as powerful as they were, some cases maybe more powerful than they were when they first came into our understanding or into our experience. So it was the cultural reference, the power of the cultural reference, and we decided, based on that we would go for these pieces.
How did you set it up so that, because I want to get a sense of what you want us, the audience, to experience. What do you want that ride for us to be like?
Most people go to the movies and don't listen to the music. I do because I'm a musician. Musicians are hyper aware. They are very aware of the music that is enhancing, that's elaborating, that's amplifying the emotion, or that's carrying the story forward. But most people go to the movies. And they let that movie tell the story. The way we will bring this music forward on Saturday night does allow you to contemplate the music, to understand and appreciate the genius of John Williams. And the way we'll do it is to use short clips, 5, 6, 7 minutes of these movies that I spoke of before. And then the orchestra will play as the movie rolls, as the images are playing for you as if you were in the movie. And you will rebalance in your mind. You will have a new understanding of the importance of the music as it relates to the visual and the visual that is being enhanced by the music. So what we want people to do is to, in some ways, just sit back and let this powerful storytelling hit them right between the eyes, but we also want them to have one more dimension to the experience, which is, oh my goodness, I didn't realize this music was so powerful.
What have you heard from some of the fellows about this opportunity to play this music?
This music is cultural reference for them. These movies are cultural reference for them, just like for the rest of us. Because John Williams doesn't do that much live conducting, they were, first of all, just amazed that they were going to get a chance to do this, to meet him and to play his music with them, with him conducting the orchestra. So it will be a touch point for the rest of their artistic lives. They will be able to say that they got to play music under the direction of John Williams. They also get to enjoy this music for its symphonic sophistication and beauty. Again, this music sometimes passes out of sight. The story overtakes the music as you're watching a movie, but they're going to get to present this music full on, as it can be so powerful. And the chance to do that is something I don't think any of them ever thought they would be able to do. So they're pretty excited, and for all the right reasons.
I'm talking with Howard Herring. He's president and CEO of the New World Symphony Orchestra. Over the past month, the orchestra has put on a series of performances featuring the music of the legendary composer John Williams, music from films like E.T., Jaws, and Harry Potter. The performances culminate with a performance conducted by John Williams himself this weekend at the New World Symphony soundstage. Howard, it's an interesting thing to note that the majority of the folks with the New World Symphony administration have background in music as performers. You were a pianist for many years, right?
Many of us began our lives as musicians and made choices along the way to move to the management side. And it does inform who we are and what we do. More than anything, it's the dedication to the art form that drives us and that inspires us. And of course, New World, especially wonderful in that way.
What was the transition like, going from being a musician, going into the business side?
So I had an idea that I would make a festival, a music festival, chamber music festival. And I quickly understood that the costs of this festival were greater than the money that we could make by selling tickets. And the gap between ticket sales and the realization of the dream was large enough that I began to ask people how I could. And I had a particularly wonderful individual, a gentleman who was my mentor in many ways. He explained to me that we would ask people to close the gap. We would ask people to give us money and allow this festival to go forward. And in the doing of that, in the spinning of the dream, in the moment of requesting funding, I began to realize that, yes, I could play the piano, but I could also tell the world how important this music is. So I began to drift away from being a pianist and over toward being the person who was in charge of translation, of encouraging people to get excited and then generous toward the music and the musicians and the institutions that bring it together.
Do you see and do you believe that the younger generations are into classical music? They're into, you know, the symphony performances.
We have seven performance formats. We have seven audiences. And some of those audiences come for a specific experience. And we have designed those experiences for those audiences. And some of those audiences are younger, and some are older, and some are across the entire spectrum. Wallcast is the most powerful in terms of drawing children, parents, the retired citizens of this community, from babies all the way to the other end of that spectrum. If you get beyond the fact that this music is only for a small subset of the population, if you begin to think about the experience that will draw various groups from a community based on what they are anticipating, what is fun for them, what is delightful, what will engage them. Once that experience is built and you put the classical music down inside that experience, the only thing that's left to do is to find and encourage those people.
Tell us, for the folks who haven't been to the soundscape, describe what this weekend's performance is going to be like.
We're going to start at 7:45, and we're going to have about 90 minutes of music. We will have, inside the performance hall, there are 10 4K Hitachi cameras that are going to capture this concert. Sophisticated microphones. We mix this sound twice before it's amplified into the park. And the image will travel from those 4K cameras to 4K projectors. So those who are in the park will be getting a high-definition visual, and they will get the benefit of a speaker system, Meyer speakers, 167 of them, carefully aimed, so that if you are in the speaker, inside the cluster of speakers, it is a three-dimensional experience. It is as powerful as any amplified and projected sound system, video system in the United States. You also get the incredible combination of youth, energy, and excellence that is the New World Symphony. So they'll be playing, our crew will be capturing and wall casting, and you also get to be out in the beautiful environment, the nature, that the beautiful natural environment of South Florida at this time of year. It's about as good as it gets.
So let's finish with this and have a little fun. I'm curious, what is the one John Williams piece of music, whether it's a film score or a concerto, that most resonates with you?
Oh, it's E.T. It's the music from E.T. We all have in our mind the image of the two fingers coming together, the magic of that moment, an extraterrestrial and a human finding each other. It's and of course that's a metaphor for connection on all levels. It's very powerful, and I love the music from E.T.
That was Howard Herring, president and CEO of the New World Symphony. The free performance featuring music from John Williams at the Soundscape is this Saturday. We will have more information at WLRN.org. Okay, mine's Jaws. I just had to say that. Jaws, Raiders of the Lost Ark, and Superman. Those are my three John Williams all-time favorite. Share with us on our social media, Facebook or Twitter, at WLRN Sundial, your favorite John Williams cuts. Well, that's Sundial for this Thursday, February 28th, the last day of the month. Sundial is produced by Chris Remington and Alejandro Martinez. Our intern is Kaylee Rodriguez. Our engagement editor is Katie Leprit. Teresa Frontado is our digital director. Our news director is Terrence Shepard. Alicia Zuckerman is our editorial director. WLRN's program director is Jason Zabka, and our technical supervisor is Peter J. Meritz. Well, coming up next week on Sundial, the Delray Beach Task Force is hosting a series of conversations on the issues of drug abuse. We're going to meet one of the keynote speakers. Plus, the fight to save our coral reefs comes to FIU. It's part of Miami's first Youth Climate Summit, and a new photography exhibit capturing the lives of folks living in boats off the coast of Key West. All of that coming up next week on the program. Just a reminder about our book club. It's free to join. Find our Facebook group, Sundial Book Club. Everyone's welcome. The March title is Their Eyes Were Watching God by Zora Neale Hurston. If you've read it, share with us one of the things you love about the book. Find us again on our Facebook group. Well, that's the program. I'm Luis Hernandez. Have a great Friday. Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you again on Monday.